This is Deanna Spingola. It is Wednesday, October 24th, 2012, and this is one of my special interviews. We have no commercials, no censorship, no calls, and no music. It is just education and information. It is bare bones broadcasting. My guest today is Ty Bollinger. He is the author of Cancer, Step Outside the Box. His websites are cancertruth.net and cancerstepoutsidethebox.com. Ty, welcome to the program.
Deanna, thank you so much for having me on today. I appreciate it.
Well, this is a book that every listener should get because they're going to need it, because you do not wait until your relative, your son, your daughter, your husband, your wife gets cancer before you get this book. You want to know what to do before, because I believe that patients are so vulnerable that when the doctor says, oh, you've got cancer, you immediately want to react. You want to get that tumor out. You want to just eradicate it from your body. And so you fall prey to these profit-producing doctors who do it for the profit. And I know that you've said in your book that you don't blame the doctors, you blame the industry. But
still,
they go along with this.
They do. They do. They do go along with it. And it is about the money. It's sad but true. But the doctor, most oncologists know that what they're doing is not helping the problem, because there was a study or a survey that I cite in the book that was conducted up at McGill Cancer Center in Toronto, Canada, I believe. Maybe it's Montreal. Anyway, it's in Canada. And they surveyed 64 oncologists, asked them if they would submit to chemotherapy if they were diagnosed or if their family were diagnosed. And 91% of them, 58, said they wouldn't. So they know that it's not a very effective treatment. I get contacted regularly by oncologists who have been diagnosed with cancer and are asking what their viable alternative options are, who will ask me to keep their identity private, because they don't want other people to know that they're seeking alternative treatments when they're the oncologist. It's bizarre to me that an oncologist that is supposedly trained to treat cancer would contact me to ask, What should I do for my cancer? But they know that the traditional treatments, the chemo, radiation, and surgery, just don't work.
Right. And Ty, you're not a doctor.
I'm not a doctor. I'm actually a CPA with a master's in taxation. I graduated from Baylor in 1991 with a undergraduate in accounting and a master's in tax. And so I'm not a doctor. But one thing that my schooling did teach me how to do was to research. And so one of the things that we did in master's program was to take sections of the Internal Revenue Code that were very complicated and research them and write it and take it down a notch. Imre Lagasse likes to kick it up a notch. We kicked it down a notch so that everybody else could understand what it was saying. So I feel like if you can do that with the Internal Revenue Code, studying medical-related topics is child's play compared to the Internal Revenue Code. So I use that skill to be able to do health research and to come to some pretty startling conclusions.
Right. Now, your wife, at very early on, was diagnosed with diabetes. And, of course, you were concerned. And what did you tell her?
That's actually, I get a lot of people that think that. That's actually not my wife. That was in the book, in the intro to the book.
That's right.
Yeah, it was written by Webster Kerr, who people know as the cancer tutor. He's got the most prolific cancer website on the internet, the alternative website. It's called cancertutor.com. But that was Webster wrote the preface to the book, and he was actually, that was him speaking about his wife.
Okay. I read it in the middle of the night, so.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I've gotten that many times saying, oh, how'd you, you know, it's great, you cured your wife from diabetes. Actually, that was Webster. But there are natural cures for many, many diseases. As a matter of fact, two weeks ago, we published another book called Work With Your Doctor to Diagnose and Cure 27 Ailments with Natural and Safe Methods. And we deal with other diseases other than cancer in this book. And there's natural treatments for almost every disease.
Right. And it's amazing. Now, Work With Your Doctor, do you really think that there are going to be doctors that will work with their patients on finding something natural for their maladies?
Yeah, without a doubt, there are doctors. There's not a lot of doctors, but there are doctors. I know many of them personally. I wrote this book in conjunction. My co-author is Dr. Michael Farley, And he and I also published another book last year called A Guide to Understanding Herbal Medicines. So we've published a couple books together, and through Dr. Farley, I've met a lot of integrative type doctors that are looking for natural methods. I just spoke at a cancer conference out in Los Angeles at the 1st of September, and I met many, many traditional oncologists that are out there practicing oncology at large hospitals, and they're looking for natural methods to treat cancer. And they know of colleagues that are looking for natural methods, cardiologists that are looking for natural methods for heart disease and so on. So they are out there. I didn't know how many of them there were until within the last several months since we've put this book together, but they're out there. You just got to find them. And if you go to your doctor, the purpose of this latest book is to have scientific studies in the book that show that these certain natural remedies do work on whatever disease it might be. And if you go to your doctor and you show him these studies and he won't listen to it, he or she won't even have an open mind to these natural treatments, then you fire that doctor and you find one that will.
Right, because actually they do work for you. I have a doctor I've been going to for a long, long time. Yep. I don't go very often. I don't get mammograms, and I don't do a lot of things she recommends, because it is my body and it's my decision to accept her suggestions or not.
Yeah, and you're right. They do work for you. I mean, a rudimentary example that I've used before: if you're taking your car to a mechanic and it keeps breaking down, you go to another mechanic. But why do we continue going to the same doctor when we're continually sick? Why wouldn't we find a doctor that would help us to get well?
And that's what I did.
Yeah, there you go.
Yes, indeed. You say in the book that girls face a 35% chance of developing breast cancer by the time they are 40.
I don't remember that exact percentage, but I'd have to look back and see where I found that. But that's about right. And a lot of it is because what's a big push? What's a big diagnostic push?
Right. Everybody wants to have a mammogram. They want everyone to have a mammogram.
Mammogram. There you go. So it's been shown that, I think it's Dr. Blaylock, it was in one of his research studies that one mammogram increases your chance of cancer by 2%. So let's say that you do that over the period of 10 years. Well, then you've just increased your chance of cancer by 20%, right? And so you can keep doing the math. Let's say you have one for 20 years. Well, you just increase your chance of cancer by 40%. Mammograms do increase your risk of cancer. But the reason that there would be so many women that would be diagnosed with breast cancer at such an early age is, number one, breast cancer is an estrogen-sensitive cancer. And one of the reasons that breast cancers have exploded is because of all of the phytoestrogens and the xenoestrogens that are out there, the pseudoestrogens. So there's pesticides, for example, on our vegetables and fruits. They have an estrogenic effect on the body. Soybeans have phytoestrogens in them, the diazidine and genizine. Two of the isoflavones are actually phytoestrogens. They're plant estrogens. So when a woman has her ratio of testosterone to estrogen out of whack, and testosterone is not a male hormone and estrogen is not a female hormone, it's just we have different ratios. But when the testosterone and estrogen ratio gets out of whack, that's when a woman is at risk of estrogen-sensitive cancers, and breast cancer is one of them. Another reason, there was a very, very extensive study that was done, and it was printed in a book called Dress to Kill. The authors were Singer and Grismeyer, and they did a study of women in Fiji, and it was thousands of women that they did this study on, and they looked at women that wore bras versus women that did not wear bras. Women wearing a bra 24 hours a day, according to this study, and it was published in their book, had a 3 in 4, 75% chance of developing breast cancer. Women that wore bras only between 12 and 24 hours a day, not all day, were 1 in 7. Women that wore bras between 1 hour and 12 hours a day, 1 in 152. And women that never wore bras had a 1 in 168 chance of getting breast cancer.
Why is that?
Well, wearing a bra does what? It increases the hormone prolactin, which decreases the circulation in the breast tissue.
Oh, yes.
And decreasing circulation can impede the body's natural removal of our carcinogenic fluids that become trapped in the lymph nodes. So where do most breast cancers start? They start right at the lymph node where the side wires of the bras go underneath your arm. That's where majority of breast cancers begin. So there you have it. That's wearing a bra is a big cause for breast cancer. If you do wear a bra, what I recommend is that you jump on a rebounder, because jumping on a rebounder will stimulate that lymphatic flow and get your lymph system working again that the bra has caused to stop flowing. And just a simple up and down motion on the mini trampoline, the rebounder, can stimulate that lymphatic flow and can decrease your risk of breast cancer.
Wow. Now in your book, you say that 225,000 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer, and about 25% of these women will die of the disease. And we have the highest breast cancer rate in the world.
Yep. Yeah, we do. And a lot of it's because of the estrogens, the fake estrogens. A lot of it is because of the mammograms. We are one of the top countries, if not the top country, for getting mammograms. And mammograms do cause cancer. It's ionizing radiation to the breast. And it's kind of absurd to me that that's the chief diagnostic tool for breast cancer, when there's a better alternative in what's called advanced thermography, where the woman would just lay down on a table and they blow cool air over the breast and they take a thermal image of it. And if there's any cancerous tumors or precancerous tumors, they show up as a hot spot on the thermal image because the cells do not react as quickly as normal cells to the cold air. And so you would see a hot spot on the thermal image. That is much more effective. It can detect breast cancer up to 5 years before a mammogram. It's not ionizing radiation. You don't have your breast squished and damaged by the way that a mammogram does. But it's not as lucrative, and I think it's actually more effective. It's clearly more effective, but I think one of the reasons that it's not being used is because it's more effective.
Wow. Which goes to the profit motivation behind all of this.
It is. It's all about the bottom line. It's about the money that's generated, because cancer is the most lucrative disease in the world. And there are tens of thousands of people making a living off of cancer patients. So are people really looking for a cure? A lot of people are. I mean, not everybody in the cancer industry is a bad person. There's a lot of good people that are just being brainwashed and that have bought the lie. But at the top level, they are not trying to find a cure, because it's very, very lucrative. It's very, very lucrative for the American Cancer Society, especially their board of directors and the president. I think the president of the ACS last year made over $2 million in his compensation package. So he's not too motivated to find a cure for cancer, when at that point the American Cancer Society will then disband. It's written in the minutes to the charter that the ACS will disband if they find a cure for cancer. There's a lot of people making a living off of cancer.
Now, isn't it true that some of the people who make these mammogram machines also are big officers in the American Cancer Society?
Yeah, I mean, I call that the incest factor in my book, where they're all in bed together. You've got members of the ACS, you've got board of directors for the FDA, you've got the people on the board, major stockholders in the big pharmaceutical companies. They're all the same people. I mean, there's probably not a better example of this incest factor than the Monsanto. So let's look at Monsanto. You look at Michael Taylor, who is now the food safety czar for Obama. Michael Taylor was a former FDA deputy commissioner. He was also one of the chief lead counsels for Monsanto when they passed the food equivalency doctrine back in the mid-90s, the substantially equivalent doctrine for GMO foods, which basically said that since GMOs are substantially equivalent to food, there's no testing that needs to be done on them, and they don't need to label them in the foods, which is what they're fighting right now in California with Prop 37, trying to force the companies to label genetically modified foods, which cause cancer and sterility. And that's come out recently in some pretty groundbreaking studies. Taylor worked for Monsanto, worked for the FDA, and now he works for the government as our food safety czar, supposedly to keep us safe. Okay, that's absurd. Another example of this revolving door is Margaret Miller. Okay, Miller was a Monsanto employee. So in order for FDA, the FDA to determine whether the growth hormone, the RBGH that Monsanto manufactures, that's in the, that they inject into the cows to make them grow faster, if it was safe. Monsanto was required to submit a scientific report on that topic. Okay, Margaret Miller was one of their researchers that put that report together. Now, shortly before the report was submitted, Miller left Monsanto and was hired by the FDA, and her first job was what? To determine whether or not the report was valid.
So, oh my gosh.
In short, she approved her own report.
Unbelievable.
Okay? That's just a couple of anecdotal stories. I could give you dozens more. The incest factor is huge. They are all working together.
Now, regarding that, what did you call it? GHB, RGH.
RBGH, yeah, recombinant bovine growth hormone.
Well, anyway, there was a lady and her husband who were working on a story for Fox News down in, I believe it was in Florida, yeah. Jane Aker.
Yeah, yeah.
I
can't remember if I touch on that or not in the book, but they were fired and their story was buried.
Yes, and they had to rewrite their story 75 times, and then they were fired.
Yeah, yeah, I do touch on that. I believe the book's so big, I can't remember if I mentioned that, but I think I touch on that, the fact that that story was buried.
When they went to court, the court said it's perfectly all right for the media to lie to people or to not tell the truth or to create stories.
Yeah, that's absolutely what happens all the time. I think the story that you're talking about, wasn't that down in Tampa? Was it Tampa, Florida?
Yes.
Yeah. And basically what happened in that story, if I remember correctly, is that Monsanto pressured Fox News to water down the series, and they actually offered to bribe the reporters if they would keep silent, basically, about the report. But they did not agree to that. Thank God they have some people that are still honest. And at that point, they filed a lawsuit, didn't they, against?
They did.
And that happens all the time. Here's what happened in 1998. There was a Canadian scientist actually acquired the full Monsanto studies for the first time that were done to look at RBGH. And they found out that the studies actually showed that RBGH caused prostate cancer and thyroid cancer in lab rats. Okay, that's what the studies found out. They did not publish that. So Monsanto is known that the RBGH causes at least these two types of cancers for at least 20 years now. They never published it, though, because they're not concerned with whether it's healthy or not. They're not concerned with whether or not it causes cancer. They're concerned with, is it going to be a profitable drug to sell to the farmers so they can make more money making the cows fat quicker, so they can slaughter them quicker, so they can get more money on the meat and the milk. That's the bottom line. It's the bottom line is the bottom line. Is it going to be profitable? It's not about health.
Which is amazing to me that there are people on the planet who are so psychopathic that they really don't care about other people.
And there's a lot of them.
Yes, apparently.
There's a lot of them. Yeah, it's sad but true.
Now, this month it's October, National Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and everybody's got the pink ribbons, and there's all kinds of TV commercials and races, Race for the Cure. And Breast Cancer Awareness Month, early detection is your best protection. In fact, the last time that my doctor offered me a mammogram, I actually had to sign saying that I had rejected it. And she said, yes, but early detection saves lives. And I said, how can you say that when it's radiation? And radiation is bad.
What'd she say? What was her answer?
She really didn't say. She says, well, it saves lives. And she asked me also if I wanted a flu shot, and I said, no. Do you get a flu shot?
No, I asked her.
I said, what did you say? And she just grinned at me.
She didn't. Well, yeah, that's something. Dr. Oz, that's been going around quite a bit. Dr. Oz recommending everybody get their kids vaccinated, but when he was interviewed, find out he does not vaccinate his children.
Right, but it's okay for him to suggest that everyone vaccinate their children despite all this evidence.
Yeah, he can get on national TV and tell tens of millions of viewers to vaccinate their kids, but he doesn't vaccinate his own. That's pretty hypocritical to me.
Right. Now you mention in your book that that the company that really promotes, the major sponsor for Breast Cancer Awareness Month is AstraZeneca.
Yeah.
And tell us a little bit about that.
Well, guess what? Guess what one of the drugs that they manufacture is?
Tamoxifen?
Yeah, tamoxifen. So the number one drug used to treat breast cancer is manufactured by the company that promotes Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So they want to have women diagnosed with breast cancer so they can treat it with tamoxifen, which, as I've mentioned before many times, it was in 1996 was declared by the World Health Organization as a known class 1 carcinogen. In other words, it causes cancer.
Now don't oncologists read these journals where this information is available?
Yeah, they do. I'm sure they do. We have a conundrum because they're so busy that a lot of times the main place that they get their information is from, instead of going out and reading peer-reviewed studies that are out there available on the NIH or on PubMed or National Medicine Library, they'll just go to the journals that they receive each month, and they're so prominently displayed on their coffee tables in their office. Those medical journals contain a bunch of propaganda because they're funded by the pharmaceutical companies. 90% of the advertising in those medical journals comes from big pharmaceutical companies. So all they're going to really read about are the positive effects or supposed positive effects of the latest and greatest drug. They're not going to hear about the negative effects because the editors of those journals do not want to lose their biggest advertisers. So if they were to publish the truth about some of these drugs that they're promoting, they would lose that sponsor. So you're going to get a very skewed perspective on the pharmaceutical drugs in those medical journals, and that's where the doctors get most of their continuing education. And they're also, many doctors are bribed. I have personal doctor friends that have read my book and said, you know, you are so right, Ty. They offer us paid vacations to Hawaii and, you know, a week-long family vacation to Cabo, where all we have to do is attend a daily one-hour seminar where they are pushing the drugs, and we have to, basically it's implied that we need to push their drugs on our patients, and if we'll do that, we can get all these fringe benefits. And so that bribery is a regular occurrence with these doctors. As a matter of fact, there are several stories that have come out in just the last few months, and I cannot remember the exact companies that were implicated, but they admitted that they've been bribing doctors. These are large pharmaceutical companies. I believe one of them was Pfizer, but they admit that they've been bribing doctors for decades to get them to push their drugs. I'd have to pull those articles up. I typically print them out because I just read an article today. Here, folks, print out the stuff you want to save, because they can, if it's electronic, they can get rid of it off of the internet if they want to. And so print out any interesting articles that you want to. Don't just bookmark the page, because the page can be gone. There was a story that I just read today about a lady that was, I believe, in England and had all these Kindle books. And something happened where they claimed that she had violated some kind of terms of service with Kindle. And they came in and erased all of her books. So if you want to keep the information, print it out. So I printed out these articles. I don't have them at my fingertips. That's all I'm trying to. I'm rambling here, but that's what I'm trying to say.
Oh, my. Well, the AstraZeneca company manufactures tamoxifen, and you talk about a Dr. Tibor J.
Hegedus.
Hegedus, okay. Yeah. And also Dr. Betty Martini has written about tamoxifen in her article, Tamoxifen, Tears and Terror, and I've talked to her briefly about this. But they give tamoxifen to women with breast cancer to block the entrance of estradiol into the tumor cells dependent upon this hormone to stimulate growth. But then the hormones are blocked from reaching their primary targets. They're forced to travel to other organs, and that makes the cancer metastasize, right?
Yeah. In layman's terms, that's basically the tamoxifen makes the cancer spread. And estradiol is a form of estrogen. So basically it blocks the estrogen, the form of estrogen, and makes the cancer cells travel to other parts of the body. That's what tamoxifen does. So it's very common to have a woman that's on tamoxifen to eventually have metastasized cancer because it makes it spread. And the sad thing is, women are dying from this, and the companies that sell these drugs know it. They know that they are harming them, and they know that they are making the cancer spread. But it's just too darn lucrative for them to change.
And even an oncologist who does nothing but treat cancer patients day in and day out, certainly an oncologist must recognize that most of her patients die.
Yeah, they do. That's why they won't take the drugs themselves. That's why 91% of oncologists surveyed won't do chemo if them or their family are diagnosed with cancer. There's a study that I reference in the book. It was a study that was done at the Royal Sydney Cancer Clinic in Australia. It was published in PubMed, and it showed that the effects of chemotherapy on a five-year survival rate, how successful is chemotherapy, five-year survival rate, it was 2.1% in Australia, and it was 2.3% in the United States. So over 97% failure rate for chemotherapy in the U.S. and in Australia, and it's the same worldwide. This is unacceptable to me. I'm a CPA. I look at numbers. I look at statistics. And if you told me, I'm going to give you a drug that makes you vomit all the time, makes your hair fall out, you're going to feel horrible, and you're probably going to be weak and decrepit, look like a concentration camp victim by the time you die, and it's got a less than 3% success rate, you know what I would tell you? Forget it. I'll try something else.
Right. Anything else. Doing nothing is better than doing what the doctor says.
Yeah, there's several studies that I reference in the book that show that the cancer patients that do nothing have a better survival rate than those that do traditional medicine for like chemotherapy and radiation. The doctor that I just published these last couple books with after my cancer book, the Survival Herbs book and the Work With Your Doctor book, Michael Farley, he used to work for the United States Department of Justice. In his training for that, he was a forensic pathologist. During his training, he did autopsies on cancer patients. He told me, and he said on several radio shows that we've done together, that he never found a cancer patient that died of the cancer. They always died from radiation toxicity or chemotherapy toxicity to the liver and the kidneys, et cetera, et cetera. They all died from the treatments, not from the cancer.
Wow. And oncologists have also been known to tell their patients that they don't need to take any extra vitamins or anything like that because they get all of their nutrition from the food that they eat.
Yeah, foods that are genetically modified with pesticides laden all over them and they're grown in nutritionally deficient soil. Yeah, right. Give me a break. What kind of a moron do they think we are?
Well, yes, indeed. Are you familiar with Dr. Lorraine Day's breast cancer story?
Yeah, I'm vaguely familiar with her. What did she use to treat her breast cancer? I know it was a natural.
Yeah, she was... She wasn't an oncologist. She was a orthopedic doctor. She was head of orthopedic department in San Francisco. And she had a friend that they went to medical school together and just were very, very good friends. And they both got cancer at about the same time. And the friend opted to do the allopathic treatment. And Dr. Day said she was just going to treat it herself. And she did she changed her diet. Right. She started drinking distilled water and basically not much of anything else. And her breast cancer, it was quite large. She does have a picture of it on her website. And so it's amazing that even doctors, you said that most of them would not submit to chemotherapy, but some doctors are even so brainwashed that they will opt for that kind of a treatment.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's pretty true across the board. I was vaguely familiar with her protocol. I thought that she used one specific alternative treatment, but I'm probably wrong. I may have been thinking of somebody else. But the fact that she changed her diet, that's huge. That's something that many people don't realize how important diet is, because if your cancer is a result of a poor diet, is a result of eating pesticide-laden, genetically modified foods, eating processed foods that are full of fake foods, fake fats that your body doesn't even recognize as food. If those foods are compromising your immune system, it only makes sense that in order to have a long-term control for the cancer, that you would want to change your diet if that's one of the primary causes. And so that is typically one of the first things that a cancer patient needs to do is to change their diet, because it's most likely that something that they've been eating, probably sugar, is one of the things that's compromised their immune system and has caused the cancer to start with.
Right. Now, AstraZeneca, according to your book, also makes herbicides and fungicides.
Yeah.
Which is making people sick. And then they come along and make a product that treats what the cancer that their herbicides and fungicides made them sick from.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great business model if you have no conscience. You're selling drugs that cause other problems that you can sell more drugs to treat, and then those drugs will create more problems. You can develop more drugs to treat them. That's for a person that has no moral conscience. I couldn't do that. You couldn't do that. But
no.
They're doing that. It's a great business model, like I said, if you have no conscience.
Right. Now, let's see. You said in your book, you were referring to the FDA and some of the other alphabet agencies of the government. And a lot of people think that the FDA is testing all of these products and they're there to make sure that we're safe. When in fact, that is just the opposite. They work for the corporations and receive a lot of money. And of course, the congressmen receive a lot of money. I remember the story of when they were trying to pass aspartame. And they passed out all of this money, and the congressman went ahead and said, oh, okay.
Yeah,
and
bribery is commonplace.
Yes. And, of course, they've changed the name now. I think aspartame is listed under natural sweetener or something because didn't the patent expire?
You know, I'm not sure if it did or not. I've recently seen it on labels as aspartame, but maybe it's older products. But they'll call it different things. They'll call it AminoSweet. They'll call it – well, there's a new form of aspartame that's called Neotame. It's not a form of aspartame. It's similar to aspartame, but it's more toxic than aspartame. They've got several different names for it. But bottom line is it was on the Pentagon's list of biowarfare weapons in 1976, and 6 years later, it was approved for use in our food supply. So what happened? happened in that 6 years so that turned a bioweapon into something that's good for you to use in our drinks and our foods?
Wow. Now, you state that only 3% of the 80,000 chemicals in use have been tested for safety.
Yeah, a lot of times the EPA will allow something to be approved, or even the FDA, when it's something that's a food product, will be allowed to the company will be allowed to do a self test. So there's no peer reviewed testing that's done on them. The company that's trying to get the substance approved will do the test themselves, and then they'll submit it, and then it'll be approved because of course the results of that test are going to be favorable because they conducted it and nobody reviewed it. That's commonplace. The way that you lay out the parameters of a study, you can prove anything, depending upon how you lay the study out.
Sure. Now, in addition to all the toxins in our environment, you state that there are three main causes of breast cancer: mammograms, antiperspirants, and bras. Now, you've talked about mammograms and bras. Talk to us a little bit about the antiperspirants.
Sure. As we've mentioned, one of the chief problems today is that the environment's toxic. So we have toxicity in our bodies. We have three primary detoxification systems in our bodies. One of them is our colon. Now, everybody knows how we detox through our colon. We don't need to go into details there. We also have the sweat glands. We also have the lymphatic system. We've already addressed how the bras cause breast cancer because they stop the flow of the lymphatic system underneath the arms. The other detox system that we have is our sweat glands. And so what happens, why is something called an antiperspirant? Because they stop perspiration. So one of the main problems is that it stops your body from perspiring underneath the arm. And so that our body's not detoxifying at that point, at that spot where we put on the antiperspirant under the arm. That's why you should never, ever use an antiperspirant of any kind. Your body sweats for a reason. When you stop the sweat, you're stopping the detoxification of heavy metals and so on that would come out underneath your arm. So that's one problem with antiperspirants. The other problem is that a lot of them contain aluminum, and a lot of them contain parabens. They contain other toxic chemicals that you're rubbing right underneath your arm, and you're doing it typically, if you're a woman, what have you just done before you use the antiperspirant? You've probably just shaved. And so those chemicals have a ready path to get into your system, whereas if you're a man, unless you're a competitive bodybuilder, you probably didn't just shave your underarm. So men have lower incidence of cancers there because they didn't just shave and then put on the antiperspirant. So the combination of shaving and then putting on the antiperspirant with aluminum and parabens and these other substances that cause cancer. And there's traces of parabens in almost every sample of breast cancer that was taken in a study that was conducted somewhere. I can't remember where the study was conducted, but they always find parabens in breast cancers. And where do the parabens come from? They come from the deodorants, the antiperspirants that you put on after you shave.
So using a deodorant is much better.
Yeah, if it's a natural deodorant. You don't want an aluminum-based deodorant, which most of them are aluminum-based. But we use a deodorant that's a powder deodorant. I think it's Nature's Gate is the brand. But it's just a powder with no aluminum. You can also use baking soda. Baking soda is a great deodorant. It's not an antiperspirant. It's a great deodorant.
Right.
So there's a lot of natural things you can use.
And make certain to use one that doesn't have aluminum in it.
Right. So if you buy the typical Arm & Hammer, I guess, baking soda, it's going to have aluminum in it. So you want to get an aluminum-free. Bob's Red Mill, I believe, is the brand that we use of baking soda that's aluminum-free. So make sure there's no aluminum in it.
Yeah, that's the brand I use also.
Yeah, good brand. They got a lot of great products.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful products.
Yeah.
You mentioned the NCI.
Yeah.
And some of the other agencies, and I mean, when you think of all these agencies, and people must think that we are all safe and that they are studying, they're researching. But as we were talking before, they pretend to do all this research and collect all of this money, but they don't seem to be making any progress. Now, when I was a kid, I was really concerned about cancer. You know, kids think, you know, my mother she talked about it a lot.
Yeah.
And I thought, boy, when I grow up, I'm going to find the cure for cancer. And, you know, there still is no cure.
Yeah.
Or a cure that they want to tell you.
Not about. A mainstream cure, correct.
And there are a lot of cures, aren't there?
Yeah. Well, concerning the term cure, I don't like to use the term cure with cancer, even though I do sometimes, because cancer is really a normal occurrence in everybody. We all produce thousands of cancer cells each day. It's only when we have a compromised immune system that the cancer becomes uncontrollable. It grows uncontrollably, and we could be diagnosed with life-threatening cancer. So it's not really something that we cure. It's really something where we correct the root problem, which is a compromised immune system, and then the body controls it on its own. Because you don't really cure cancer because it's a natural occurrence. You basically keep your body in equilibrium, homeostasis, to such an extent that it can control the cancer normally. That's why a lot of folks have begun to say you want to control cancer instead of cure it, because it's a natural occurrence. But I get the question, and I still say cure cancer quite often because I've been saying it for so long. But it's really more control of cancer with proper immune supplements and proper nutrition.
Right. And so the incidence of the toxicities in our environment, plus the diminution of a person's ability, the immune system is shot. That is why we have so much cancer now.
Yeah, I believe so. And the vaccines, I believe the vaccines are definitely causing cancer. I've got a pile of studies that show the definitive link between vaccines and cancer. There was the polio vaccine, if you remember back in the late 50s, was contaminated with SV40, simian virus 40, which they call monkeypox. But it has caused cancer in approximately 100,000 people since then. So vaccines contaminated with cancer viruses and so on. There's a lot of different reasons. Some of them are more insidious than others. And we could talk about that at another show, but you know, was this intentional? Was it an accident? There's good points on both sides of that argument.
I find it very difficult to believe that something so devastating could have been done just accidentally.
I do too. And there's a great book that was written about the JFK assassination and how that related to
Dr. Mary's Monkey.
Mary's Monkey. So that's a great book if somebody wants to read a really conspiratorial type book, which I use that term facetiously because I'm referred to as a conspiracy theorist. And I guess if you refuse to believe known liars, then you're a conspiracy theorist. So
right.
if that's what a conspiracy theorist is, yeah, I plead guilty. I refuse to believe known liars.
Right. Well, I think there's more conspiracy theories that the government produces than you know, single individuals
Hey, you know
produce.
what? Every time, what's the definition of a conspiracy? It's when two people, at least two people, conspire in secret to accomplish a goal. Look in the dictionary. That's what a conspiracy is. So every time we have a football game that we're watching on TV, one team is conspiring against the other because they have secretive goals. They're calling the plays in the huddle, and the other team doesn't hear them, and they're trying to accomplish a mutually known goal.
Right.
That's a conspiracy. So every time there's a sports game that's played, there's a conspiracy. So conspiracy is not this big boogeyman word. It just means that people are doing something in secret. And has the government ever done anything in secret? I think you would have to be the most naive person in the world to answer that question no.
Right. Now, they introduced mammographic screening in 1983. Was that in Britain, do you think, or
yeah,
here
I don't,
too?
I don't remember, but I know that the incidence of breast cancer since that time is, what, quadrupled?
328%.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's huge.
That's pretty obvious.
Yeah, if you actually think, isn't it? If you actually have a brain to think about, it seems pretty obvious that something has changed, and that something is the addition of mammograms. So that seems pretty obvious to you and I, but unfortunately, a lot of people still don't get it. You get the traditional doctor that would find. I've been contacted by dozens of cancer patients over the years that say, I went to the traditional doctor. They wanted to do chemo radiation. I said, no, I changed this in my diet. I did this herbal supplement, went back 6 months later, the doctor tested me, I was completely free of cancer, and I told the doctor it was because of what I had been doing naturally, and the doctor said, oh, that's just anecdotal, that didn't have anything to do with it, it must have been spontaneous remission. Hey, give me a break.
Oh, my.
So, yeah, there are those that have eyes to see, let them see, but many people are willingly blinded to this stuff.
Yes, and doesn't that say that in the New Testament?
It does. It does, and it applies to many different aspects of our life, doesn't it?
Right. Now, the cost of a mammogram, $150, and James Hallenstein.
Yeah, James Hallenstein. Yep, he's actually practicing down in Costa Rica.
Is he?
Yeah, he left the country because he was being persecuted.
Really?
Yeah, there's a lot of doctors that I know that are outside of the USA because they've been persecuted, so.
Unreal. Okay, or that have left the practice altogether.
Yeah.
Okay. So if 70 million women pay $150 to get a mammogram, you say that's over $10 billion per year.
Yeah, that's right. It's $10,500,000 or 500,000 per year. I'm sorry, 10,500,000,000. The zeros are so big, I can't even read the number. I just pulled up an Excel spreadsheet and multiplied it out. 10,500,000,000.
That's a lot of money.
It is. I mean, it's the cancer treatment industry is something like, I can't remember. I believe it's something like 30% of the United States GDP. I mean, it's almost a third of the money that we take in is from treating disease. I can't remember the exact number. I just heard it a couple of days ago, went out and researched it and found that was accurate, but I cannot remember exactly. But I believe it's close to 30%.
And so we've become it's a service industry. And I've read figures where at least 200,000 people die a year because of some mistake that the doctor has made or at the hands of the hospitals or doctors, and
well,
the figure could be even higher.
You're talking about is called iatrogenic deaths, and that's doctor related. There were so many doctor related deaths they had to invent a word for it, because if you look back 100 years ago, iatrogenic was not in the dictionary. So since that time, iatrogenic means doctor induced, and so there have been studies that have been done. And the most prolific one is done by doctors Gary Null and I believe Carolyn Dean and a few other doctors that was called Death by Medicine. And they cite the deaths, and I believe this was about 8 years ago in 2004, that in that year there were 106,000 1,000 Americans killed from drug side effects, and then 100 plus killed from bed sores and so on. And it totaled up 783,000 or so deaths that were caused by doctors and treatments in 2004. That was larger than heart disease and cancer deaths that year. So the number one killer that year, and it's only grown since then, was iatrogenic deaths. In other words, doctor-induced deaths was the number one killer in the United States. So what do you want to do to be healthy? Run as far away from iatrogenic medicine or iatrogenic causes as you can. Run away from conventional medicine as fast as possible unless you have a doctor that's willing to look outside the box.
And this was in addition to the people who died from cancer or heart disease.
Yeah, this was on top of that. So I believe that year it was something like 580,000 cancer deaths, 600-something thousand heart disease deaths, and 783,000 deaths from other doctor-induced causes.
And we don't hear about this in the media because usually the people that make the money, like General Electric,
yeah,
who make manufacturing machines, also own some of the TV stations.
The media is controlled, without a doubt. Without a doubt. So that's why you don't hear about it. The fact of the matter is you're about 6,000% more likely to be killed by your doctor than you are by a gunman. So you get these people that go out and shoot up a group of people in a theater or whatever has recently happened, and people are all afraid of, oh no, a shooter's going to get me. Let me tell you something. You're 6,000% more likely to get killed by your doctor or a treatment than you are from a shooter somewhere. The FDA actually admits on its own website that over 100,000 deaths per year are from prescription drugs. I took a screenshot of that in case they decide to remove it to prove that it was actually on the FDA's website. But over 100,000 deaths per year due to prescription drugs.
Oh, my. Yeah. Well, and so many doctors, I think they write prescriptions and then they don't look to see what else you're taking that might be affected by the new prescription.
Now, they're not taught to do that. They're just taught to prescribe. And then they treat the symptoms that are caused by that prescription by another drug. They're not really taught to look at the underlying causes, and they're not taught to look at really adverse reactions with other drugs that are being taken. Some do. I mean, I know different doctors that I've known in the past that say, you know, can't prescribe that because it's going to have a bad effect on this drug. But the majority of them don't.
Huh. Oh my. I'm just looking, going through this book. It's just amazing. I am so glad that you wrote this, and I really, really hope that the listeners will purchase the book. You had so many of your own family that passed away from cancer. You have their pictures in your book. How many were there?
Well, let's see. I lost my father initially in 1996. He went into the hospital July the 1st, and he died July the 25th. And he was a healthy man from what we knew. He had some stomach aches, and we went into the hospital and they took out his entire stomach because of cancer, and he died from the surgery. He bled to death over the course of the next 25 days. They did 19 blood transfusions in 25 days and eventually couldn't keep him from leaking, and he died. So he died from the surgery. He didn't die from cancer because he was not sick with cancer when he went into the hospital. I mean, he had cancer, but he had no symptoms other than a stomach ache. And he died 25 days later. And you don't die in 25 days from a stomach ache. You die because they botched the surgery and he bled to death. After Dad died, I lost my grandfather. I lost my uncle, my dad's brother. I lost another grandfather. I lost my grandmother, a cousin. And then eventually my mom died from cancer. So 7 close family members. And it was at the time that Mom died from cancer, 2004, that I really began to kick it into top gear, put all my research together and published this book, which came out initially in August of 2006, was when I published Cancer Step Outside the Box. And so that was really my motivation was, I'm a Christian. I wanted to honor my mother and father, and I didn't think that there was a better way to do it than to put their stories into a book so that their deaths would not be in vain and that people could be helped by this information. There was so much information on alternative treatments and the efficacy of these natural treatments that I had to get it out there. I wanted people to know. And I just pray that that's happened.
Right. Now, your dad was only 52.
He was 52.
And he didn't smoke, drink. He nope. Was healthy.
For all we knew, he was completely healthy except for some stomach aches. Now, we know that he wasn't because he had cancer of the stomach, but there was not really any symptoms that would have shown that he was end-stage cancer. So I firmly believe that if we had done nothing at that point, Dad would have lived a lot longer than 25 days.
Oh, indeed.
The problem is we don't know what he was exposed to. I've often thought that he was of the generation that came up that did get the polio virus or the polio vaccine that was contaminated with SV40. And so was my mother. And both of them died of cancer. And the research has shown that that's a latent virus that can cause cancer decades after the injection. And so I believe that Dad and Mom actually may have both been killed by the polio vaccine.
Indeed. Oh, my goodness. So we were talking about things that people could do. You say that we need to improve our immune system, that we need to be taking vitamins. And what do you think about fermented foods like sauerkraut and that kind of thing?
Yeah, they're great. They're great. They have a lot of really beneficial enzymes, probiotics in them. Excellent foods. Even the I'm against eating soy, but I'm not against eating fermented soy as long as it's not genetically modified. So the miso and the tempeh are good fermented soy products. Any fermented food like that has a lot of beneficial enzymes and probiotics. And so a lot of the immune system is in the gut. And if we can replenish the good bacteria that's in our gut, help to digest our food better with enzymes, that's always going to be a positive thing. I would say stay away from processed foods the best you can, because they not only contain hydrogenated oils and fake fats, they contain a lot of sugars. They also contain most likely genetically modified soybeans and corn, which have not only been shown to cause sterility, but they've been shown to cause cancerous tumors as well. Eat as natural as you possibly can. Fruits and vegetables as much as possible. Organic if you can find them. If not, wash off the pesticides to the best that you can. There's different ways you can do it. One of the best ways is with vinegar and water, and just let them soak to get the pesticides off the best you can.
Oh.
Those are natural ways that you can do that. But I would say eat as natural of a diet as possible. Try to exercise on a rebounder if you want to prevent cancer. It's the best exercise to prevent cancer, without a doubt, up and down on a rebounder, because it stimulates the lymphatic flow. And one of the things that I do every night, except for Sunday, because Sunday's church day and I come home and hang out with the family and we just do nothing except just talk, is lay in a far infrared sauna. And so the far infrared sauna makes you sweat, and the hyperthermia has been shown to kill cancer cells. It also helps your body to detoxify with the sweat. So lymphatic system is the key. Hyperthermia is the key to help you sweat. And let's see, what else?
Now, I have a near-infrared sauna. And you say you use a far infrared sauna?
What exactly do you mean with near infrared?
It's just, it's a different type of a bulb, I think.
Okay.
That was just the one that was recommended to me. Mine's a kind of a little portable one.
Yeah.
And
does it heat you up pretty good?
Yeah, really does.
You sweat quite a bit?
Yeah.
Okay, then it's doing what it needs to.
Yeah. Now, you also talk in your book about skin cancer.
Yeah.
And that is usually found in people who have excessive sun exposure during their adolescence and have red or blonde hair or fair skin.
Well, yeah, because those are the people that are going to burn more easily. And burn more easily, that you're going to damage the cells, your skin cells, the DNA, and that's going to be eventually could result in skin cancers. I've had a couple of skin cancers on my face that I've taken care of with a paste called Amazon Black Salve, which I talk about in the book. It used to be called Canzima. But yeah, there's different kinds of skin cancers. All of except for fast-growing metastasizing melanoma, basal cell and squamous cell skin cancers can be easily cured with these pastes.
Right.
If they're not metastasized.
Right. What do you think about the skin blockers or the sun blockers?
Well, they cause cancer. The ingredients in a lot of the sunscreens, they actually are carcinogenic. And so I would stay away from sunscreens unless you can find one that is from Dr. Mercola. Well, not necessarily Dr. Mercola, but somebody that sells a non-toxic sunscreen, because the sunscreens have chemicals in them like oxymethylacetinate, I think is it's called, which has been shown to kill mice, even at low doses. They also have dioxybenzone, I think, is one of the chemicals. All of the sunscreens have these chemicals in them. They also have oxybenzone. I'm trying to think of what else they have. A lot of them have the parabens, which cause cancers. So the chemicals in the sunscreens are what the problem is. It's not necessarily that you're trying to stop from getting burned. You don't want to get burned. But actually, the sun has been shown to the sun is the precursor in our bodies to vitamin D. We synthesize vitamin D from the sun, and so you want to get sun. During the summer, we lay out almost every day for about half an hour to an hour to get vitamin D, because study at Creighton University in 2009 showed that 77% of cancers can be mitigated with proper exposure to the sun.
Okay, yes, vitamin D is good, and you have a chapter on vitamin D.
Yeah, I got a chapter on vitamin D and talk about the sunscreens in there and the toxic chemicals that are in there that cause cancer. So you say, if you want to start, like I said, don't get burned. But if you want to use a good sunscreen, I know that Dr. Mercola has one that we use. I think it's just called Natural Sunscreen. But there's several good sunscreens out there. But make sure that it doesn't have the chemicals in there. And I want to make sure that I'm saying these chemicals right. So I think, hang on just a second. Let me see if I can find that section of the book. It's dioxybenzone, oxybenzone are two that you want to stay away from, and let's see if there's anything else. Yeah, oxidyl methocyanate, also known as OMC. Those are the ones that you want to watch out for in the sunscreens. And so if you get a natural sunscreen if you want to stop from being burned, but don't use sunscreen all the time because you need the vitamin D.
Right.
Vitamin D prevents many types of cancers.
Right. I have very fair skin. I'm blonde, but I never wear sunscreen.
I don't either.
You also talk about vitamin C as a viable treatment for skin cancer. And I know that a lot of people have actually had infusions of vitamin C, high-dose vitamin C, for other kinds of cancer,
Sure.
For breast cancer or whatever.
Yeah, I talk about that in the book. Dr. Linus Pauling was the one that pioneered the use of intravenous vitamin C at very, very high doses to treat cancer and was very, very successful. But what happened was the alphabet agencies came in and they wanted to prove that what he was doing was not effective. And so what they did is they came in and basically falsified his results from the vitamin C. They came in and they wanted to verify the studies that were done. But what they did is they came in and they changed the different parameters to make sure that the studies failed. So they had predetermined outcomes, which was their goal. They didn't follow the Dr. Pauling's protocol. So they basically performed some fancy statistical tricks to make sure that the studies failed so they could discredit the vitamin C. Bottom line is vitamin C is extremely effective at treating cancer and other diseases.
Right. And these were government agents that did this?
I believe it was the NCI that came in, but I'm not sure. I think it was National Cancer Institute that came in and did that. I'd have to look back and see that section of the book or do some research, but I think it was the NCI that came in to try to reconduct the studies, and they falsified them.
Kind of let you know who the government's working for, huh?
Yeah. They're paid off.
They sure are.
Got a lot of seven-figure salaries and golden parachutes that they got to keep, don't we?
Oh, indeed.
Hey, those children need the Ivy League education.
Indeed. Well, this has certainly been instructive, very informative. I hope that the listeners will purchase your book. The book is called Cancer, Step Outside the Box. The websites are cancertruth.net and cancerstepoutsidethebox.com. Fabulous, fabulous book. I am so glad that I have it. And thank you so very much for writing this book. And I hope that people will purchase it.
Thank you, Deanna. I appreciate you having me on today. I've really enjoyed it. And God bless you.
God bless you, too. Bye-bye.
Take care.
You, too.